Hello, everyone. We are here from Plant-Based OKC. Man, that song really gets me going.
Me too.
It is just so uplifting and fun. We are here with you on this fourth Tuesday for FYI, and we're always here to hopefully elevate your thinking as it relates to your health and nutrition. And if you don't know who we are, I am Andrea Conway, and we're here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello.
And he is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon here in Oklahoma City. And our good friend, Randy Titone.
I'm here in the flesh, too.
And
that
we
is true. Randy is the plant-based evangelist.
I'm just preaching the gospel.
And we are plant-based OKC.
That's exactly right.
Well, Randy, you know, that's pretty spot on, since gospel means good news.
That's right.
Well, we're hoping we're spreading the good news here today for sure, talking about our health. And man, we've been busy lately.
Boy,
just lots going on. So if you know anything about us, or if you don't, you can find out more about us on our website at plantbasedokc.com. But we do these free nutritional seminars where we go to a hospital in South Oklahoma City once a month called Community Hospital at Southwest 89th and May. And we put on a free seminar and serve a free plant-based meal. And you can sign up to attend those seminars on our website. And our one coming up next Saturday is full, but we do have one scheduled for May 26th that I still have openings for. But goodness, this month we did a seminar in Shawnee, Oklahoma, which was our second one to do. And that was very well attended, over 50 people there. And we had a lady who had attended our previous seminar in Shawnee that had a wonderful testimony about getting off of 20 different medications and losing 30 pounds, and just an amazing story. So that's why we love doing what we do and sharing this information. And then we were also in Edmond, Oklahoma this past weekend. So we've had seminars almost every weekend this month. But it is our passion and our ministry to go out and teach this information to people. And in Edmond, my goodness, we had probably 80 people attend that seminar. I had 50 notebooks on hand, and I went through them all, and not everybody got a notebook. So we had a huge crowd, and we've already been asked to possibly come back again. So I think that went well. And actually, they were gracious enough to record that seminar and post it on YouTube. Randy, do you know what it was under if someone wanted to go look for that?
No, but I will research it right now and
okay.
find it.
Well, it is on there. It's long because we were there for
3 hours.
Three and a half hours, because there were lots and lots of questions. So if you're watching it, just bear with it, because we just did get lots of feedback and had to answer a lot of questions during that seminar. But we love doing this, and we are out in the community teaching. And the other thing we do is we are at Rococo Restaurant in North Park Mall the first Monday of every month. And that is that will be coming up May the 7th, I believe, which is the first Monday of May at 6 o'clock p.m. Rococo provides a plant-based menu for us to purchase a meal from them. But just to attend and listen to us, we don't charge an entry fee. We just ask that you might purchase a dinner from Rococo.
Okay, to answer your question, I typed in Edmond Seventh-day Adventist Nutrition 101, and it pops right up.
Oh, okay.
And then I typed in Nutrition 101, and it's on the front page there.
Okay, great.
So easy to find.
If you're on the internet and you can go to YouTube, that would be some key words to get you to our seminar. And so you're welcome to obviously listen to that anytime.
Absolutely.
So we have Rococo coming up in a couple weeks, 6 o'clock p.m., North Park Mall. We're there. It's not a formal seminar, but we are there to answer questions. So anyone is welcome to come. And we just, it's more of a support group meeting, and we love it. It's very fun. And we have lots of people that have been many, many times who come and share their news as well.
I notice now how you readily accept the support group
yes.
description when I first came up with it. You were resistant to calling it that.
Did you say May 7th?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, May 7th. So the other thing we've had going on, we got this crazy hair to do a fast. And that was been interesting. So I thought we'd share a little bit about our experience. Randy's not stepped up to the plate yet.
Not yet. I'm almost finished with the book. I'm like just maybe 20 or 30 pages left. So
well, you're already past the point where it really talks about the benefits of the fast.
Yes, yes.
So there's a book called The Longevity Diet that just came out this year. It's by a gentleman named Valter, V-A-L-T-E-R.
But he's not German.
He's Italian, I
yeah.
think. Yeah,
I was thinking he was German when I first
Valter
saw that.
Longo, L-O-N-G-O. And his premise is really all about aging. And I mean, it started out with him researching ways to live longer. And it's the book starts out very, very similar to the book we've discussed on here at length called The Blue Zones Project. And studying the areas of the world that live the longest. And that was kind of, he was from an area that had very long-lived people, and he was very curious about why that was and how all that worked, especially once he came to America and saw how we consumed food here. It was very different from the place he grew up. And so, anyway, long story short, he has developed what's called a fasting mimicking diet. So while you can do a traditional fast, which would be a water-only fast, which you could accomplish the same thing, but that's a little harder to do, I think. I'm a little more scared of that.
I would say more than likely, yes, it is a little harder to do. So it's been described in terms of healing nutritional problems, or healing, actually that wouldn't be the correct term, but healing medical problems in your body. So for centuries, I got interested in studying fasting several years ago, and his name kept coming up in terms of somebody that studied longevity, and he was doing all these studies in lab animals, and now they've branched out to doing these studies in human subjects. But water-only fasting has been used for centuries to heal medical problems. And it's been occasionally accepted here in the United States since the 1800s. So initially it was thought that humans could only live 10 days without food and then you died. This was disproven by a researcher in the late 1800s who went on a water-only fast, and lo and behold, the 11th day he was still alive. And so he was alive on the 12th day and the 13th day. And so, and then we periodically kind of forget about this treatment modality to heal all kinds of medical issues. I'm talking high blood pressure. I'm talking cancer. I'm talking diabetes, heart issues. But water-only fasting has been used for centuries to treat these conditions, and especially in the late 19th century and early 20th century, when pharmaceuticals started coming on board, we kind of almost totally forgot this. But it's been described in ways to heal your body. There's a fast way to heal. There's the faster way to heal. And then there's the fastest way to heal. The fast way to heal has been scientifically proven to be whole food, plant-based. The faster way is doing a juice fast of some sort with fruit and vegetables as the sources of the juice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fastest way is the water-only fast. And Dr. Longo started studying the principles behind this water-only fast and developed this five-day meal plan that starts off with like 1,100 calories and it drops to about 700. And the specific foods he's incorporated in this meal plan are supposed to mimic going on a fasting-only diet.
A water-only fast. Without actually
going water-only. And he has laboratory studies in human subjects that show that telomeres, which are the little ends, caps on the ends of your chromosomes, these little caps basically determine the life of the cell. And the shorter your telomeres, the shorter your lifespan will be. Well, he's demonstrated in human subjects that telomeres are actually elongated with going on these fasting mimicking diet, and it turns on your body's production of stem cells. Stem cells are can be described as pluripotential, meaning they can form lots of different tissue. Mm-hmm. And so the human body has a supply of stem cells. They're usually inactivated due to the food that we eat, because our standard American diet significantly suppresses our body's ability to form stem cells. So it suppresses our body's ability to renew itself. And we were designed to have a body that would renew itself periodically. And that's where a lot of the medical research in water-only fasting has taken place. It describes how your body stops utilizing energy to digest food when you go on a water-only fast.
That's what I found so fascinating, was the concept that, you know, and it really hit home with me because in January, you got sick with flu-like symptoms while we were on vacation. I don't know if you actually had the flu. You may have.
I don't know. But I didn't get tested.
But you got pretty sick. And your appetite went away. You know,
yes,
my first
totally.
Thing was, you know, I'm trying to feed you because I'm thinking, oh, you're sick and you need nutrition to feel better. And I kept, you know, I'm wanting to, that's what I do. And that's what that's what people do. I mean, you want to help someone that's sick and you want to give them food and comfort them. But basically what he's saying is that loss of appetite when you're sick is your body's way of telling you, don't eat because I need the energy that it's going to take to digest that food to heal your body.
Right.
And I don't know. I just found that so fascinating.
Well, it is.
And it makes complete sense.
It does, especially when you consider the animal kingdom and what happens to...
Yeah, he says that in the animal kingdom, if an animal is sick, they just don't eat they're better.
They may drink water, but they don't eat. And, I mean, I've been fascinated for a couple of reasons. One, I'm convinced that my whole life I've been addicted to food, and used to. No, this is no longer the case, thank goodness. But, you know, prior to going whole food plant-based, if I got really hungry, I got physically ill. I would eventually start throwing up. I'd become so nauseated and have a horrible headache, and I'd start sweating. And I always thought those were signs of hunger, but they're not. They're signs of withdrawal from my drug of choice, which was salt, sugar, and fat. I mean, I've been addicted to that my whole life. It's interesting now that I know that I can be hungry and not get sick. I'm still afraid of that hunger because that's been so entrenched in my brain. And this was before, you know, when I was like 4 or 5 years old, I would do this. I'd get really hungry and become violently ill. And that is in my subconscious still. And so when we went on this fasting mimicking diet, you look at this food, I mean, your day's supply of food is in a little bitty 4x4 box.
So the way this plan works is you buy the food from Dr. Longo's website, and it does have to be ordered by a physician. We are signed up to order and sell the kits. So if you are listening to this and interested, you can contact us through our website and we can talk to you about purchasing a kit. But this kit comes with your entire 5 days worth of food, and it's not a very big box. So we were all kind of, so my mother who lives with us is 70, and we were all going to do this together. So we have these three boxes, and it was intimidating. And I would say for me, you know, it definitely is more of a mental challenge. And we knew for weeks we were going to do this. And I think it took me weeks to build up to the fact that I wasn't going to be able to just eat whenever I was hungry, that I only had specific
rations.
Food I was going to be able to eat. It was hilarious. The things that went through my mind, like when I had my little package of olives, it was like, I'm going to hang on to these. One cannot drop on the floor. This is all I have to eat. And how
Do you eat them all fast?
Yeah.
Or
I mean, no.
You savor every little bite.
I savored every bite of everything and ate slow.
He has these kale crackers, and I was doing surgery one the day we had the kale crackers, and I was opening this package, and the cracker crumbled a little bit. And I went, oh, my gosh. If that falls on the floor, I'm going to eat it anyway.
Shoot, yeah,
I'm
you
on
are.
A dirty hospital floor.
But it's just, it really is, now that we've done it once, I know I can do it. And his recommendation is to actually do it once a month for 3 months as your first kind of reset for and that's if you're kind of a, I would say just a normal weight person, not really dealing with a lot of medical issues. But he says you can do this once a month for months.
Correct.
Until you heal, until you get to your proper body weight, whatever. But we're going to do it once a month for 3 months. And so now that I've done it once, one, I know what to expect. And I just think the mental aspect of it isn't going to be quite as difficult as it was the first time. Just not knowing how I would feel, how I would react.
Well, I want to tell you, when I first opened that box and saw this food for a day, it freaked me out. Because I thought,
I'm just like him. I mean... I just don't want to be hungry. I want to be prepared.
But it's amazing what your body will do. It's amazing what your body will do.
So it's more of a mental exercise than physical.
It really is, because your body settles. In my opinion, your body settles in. It's your mind that takes over, and your mind is saying.
I never got where I was just ravagingly hungry.
Right.
I was afraid of that, so I drank tons of water.
We drank tons and tons of water, and have all the water, the kind of herbal
that doesn't have caffeine.
Hot tea, anything without caffeine.
Spearmint tea or hibiscus tea that doesn't really have calories. So I drank a lot of that, and, you know, I made it through the 5 days, and even the refeeding day on day six, he says, you know, you really probably ought to take it easy. You know, my first meal, so I learned to savor everything I ate. My first meal that I ate, you know, I found myself just shoveling food in my mouth.
Oh, I'll bet.
I went, whoa, wait a second, you know, because it does teach you to slow down, because when you only have a set amount of food to eat and you don't get to eat again for another 4 or 5 hours, you savor every little bite.
Well, and I think that's one of the things I've taken with me from that is, you know, I do. If I decide I'm hungry, I'll just pick up something and eat.
Right.
You know, I don't think about it.
Exactly.
And
because we don't really have to count calories eating the way we do.
No. But I do think over time, a few pounds have creeped up on me, and I could definitely learn from that. And there was some
takeaways. I lost 8 pounds of primarily belly fat because I purchased new slacks like 3 weeks prior to this. And even though the slacks fit, I could tell they were more loose around the waist.
Well, I could I know I don't drink enough water.
Right.
I mean, as much as I try to drink or think I'm drinking water, I'm not. Because let me tell you, I drank a ton of water.
And water, you know, true hunger is it feels more like
being
thirst in the back of your throat.
Yes.
And that's the thing is, being hungry in this aspect isn't the hunger you're used to. It's not a rumbling in your stomach.
Right.
It's not
Oh, my stomach
a nauseous,
rumbled a few times, but it wasn't...
A few times.
It wasn't where I got...
But it wasn't that...
water would quench it.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if even today some of my hunger is water, is a thirst.
Oh, I
you hear
absolutely
that a
think
lot.
That. I have gotten to where if I know I've eaten and I should not be hungry and I think I'm hungry, that I just go down a bunch of water.
Right.
Because 9 times out of 10, that's the thing. And the other thing, which I've always said to people that I'm working with that are trying to, you know, maybe just move from eating the standard American diet to a whole food plant-based diet, you know, I say, if you're really hungry, that carrot stick, that celery stick, that apple, that orange are going to look fantastic and you'll eat whatever. And if you are at the point where none of that sounds good and you're just looking for something, you're not hungry. That's not hunger. And let me tell you, I would have killed I would have killed for a carrot stick or a celery stick. And those olives that we got to eat as a snack were the best olives I had ever.
How many were in the pack?
There was only
five or six. That was a set.
Wait a minute, he got six.
Well,
some packs, it would depend on the weight.
I think it's all based on weight. And so depending on the big, you know, how big the olive was, there might have been five, six, seven in a pack, just depending.
I saved my olives for my drive home from, so my north office, a lot of times the drive's close to an hour.
Right.
And so I ate three olives in that drive. I just would suck on them. And that was the best olive I've ever had in my life.
I have a friend who you know that has, actually she's been vegetarian for 30 plus years and vegan for probably 15 of those. And she's getting up. I mean, she's probably, I don't think she's 70 yet, but she's getting up there. And she did it. And she did it for 5 days. Uh-huh. And she did great. She did great.
Wow.
So I do think it depends on where you are, where your lifestyle is. I mean, if you're a junk food junkie, you're a high sugar addict, high
fat.
Then
this is really needed.
This is, one, it's needed because it'll reset your taste buds quickly. It'll reset your binging, your taste buds, all of that. But you're also probably going to feel worse than we felt because, you know, it's for the most part no caffeine. He will give you allowance for one cup of coffee in the morning, which I was very thankful for. Black coffee.
So he doesn't want you adding any calories to it.
No, no extra calories.
So the whole thing is based on calories and what happens to your body in terms of, you know, most of the cells in your body utilize glucose for energy. Mm-hmm. Well, this actually, so when you stop eating, your body for a day or so will go almost into a starvation mode. Mm-hmm. So that means it consumes your muscle to produce energy, and that's called gluconeogenesis. But after during the second day of relatively no calorie intake, your body switches. And then cells in your heart and your brain will start utilizing a different source of energy, and that's fat. And that's why you start losing particularly belly fat when you go on a fast. And so when it starts utilizing the substrate of the stored fat in your body, then that produces some additional changes where you're not nearly as hungry. And after the second day, you start actually feeling good.
I would say the first 2 days were the worst.
The second day was the worst.
The first day wasn't as bad because you get the most calories on that day. So I thought it wasn't, other than wanting to snack, you know, just randomly snack, I wasn't bad at all on the first day. The second day, I found myself very fatigued.
I did too.
I just wanted to sit, and I just didn't really want to do much. Now, 3, 4, and 5, I felt great. I felt, man, I was doing everything.
I almost convinced myself to go from there to just a water-only fast. So you may think that's nuts, but the average human can go water-only for 60 days without going into starvation mode.
Yeah.
but there is a, and I think he was trying to be very clear about this in the book. I don't think anyone recommends a water-only fast without some kind of physician supervision.
Especially if you have any medical problems.
And the other thing he talked about is, I know it's going to sound like he's trying to sell these kits, which one, any profit from these kits goes back directly into research. He makes it very clear off the sale of his book and the sale of these kits. He does not make any money. It's all meant to go back in to research longevity and healing and all of that. But to try and do something like this on your own, because this has been researched for the types of calories that you get and when you get these calories, specifically like in the morning versus evening and all that kind of stuff, it's important to not try to necessarily do that on your own.
Now, that's a question.
Because I don't know that you're going to get the same result.
Well, that's what I think. I haven't looked up all the research that's listed in his book. But the way the day's worth of allotment of calories is doled out has been researched into, okay, if you do it this way, then your body will think it's water-only fasting. So if you tried to do it on your own and you replicated the exact same calories, but you may have used a little different food, who's to say that's actually going to work? I mean, this is researched.
It's been researched for years.
It's been researched for years, and first in lab animals and replicated now in humans. And, you know, yeah, it is relatively expensive for 5 days. I mean, they from their website, sell it for $250 for the 5 days. There are ways to get it cheaper. But the benefit, especially if somebody's taking medicine, because you get somebody that's taking a high blood pressure medicine, and if they're diabetic, they take metformin or whatever, and you reset that, and then you don't have to spend your money on those medicines.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to make that
I do
money
think
up in a short period
to,
of time.
You have to look at it as an investment in your health. I mean, I think the same thing. I mean, people try to say that a whole food plant-based diet is expensive, which I could, you know, prove that to be inaccurate very right. easily. But I think all of it is you have to look at an investment.
Well, most people think, well, if you eat organic food, that's going to be more expensive. And that for some reason they think, well, all we do is eat organic food.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true.
Well, when I work with people, I definitely discount that.
When you take into effect of how much money is spent for medical care in the United States, where, you know, we're close to $4 trillion in cost of health care in the United States.
We've been talking about this fast, this longevity diet, and we did the fasting mimicking diet that Walter Longo talks about. And Randy, who has not done it yet, but I am challenging him
that's
that
right.
by the time we come back here next month, Randy will have completed
that's
a five-day
right.
fast.
I've got to strategically plan it out.
So just to kind of cover a little bit about what we did eat and how the program worked. Like we said, you purchase the kit. You can purchase it through us, but we buy it from Walter Longo's Research Foundation. And obviously, because it's a kit, I mean, the foods are all vacuum packed or dehydrated. I mean, it's nothing technically fresh food for the week.
Right.
But you start out your day. So day one is the longest, or not longest. It's the most calories, not longest, which I found day number one to be very easy for the most part. So every day you start out with a bar that's pretty high in fat. It's basically nuts made from nuts and coconut. And I thought it was...
So it's whole food fat.
Yes.
So we want to emphasize that.
And it was very, very tasty. And so I really enjoyed that with my one cup of coffee every morning.
How did you do the coffee? Because I know you like cream in
well,
it or something.
Well, I just did black coffee.
She doesn't like cream.
Well, meaning...
Yeah, I do like soy milk. Lot, but
yeah.
I do. I like it with my non-dairy milk and a little
right.
teaspoon of coconut sugar. And but I will... and. I like good coffee, and I
sure.
do have some good coffee. And so I don't mind occasionally having.
Okay.
So I was perfectly fine still having my coffee every morning.
Okay.
So
all
I
right.
had my one cup of coffee with that bar. And then every day at lunch, they rotate a dehydrated soup. So it might be a tomato soup. It might be mushroom soup. It might be minestrone soup. And that was that. Actually, it's lunch and dinner are all dehydrated soups. The lunch soups are made to be cooked in a microwave, so you can obviously take those to work
right.
easily and eat them. The dinner soups are made to be cooked on the stove because they need to be cooked a little bit longer to cook the dehydrated vegetables and or the quinoa that's in them.
Okay.
And then so it's soup for lunch, and then every other day you got kale crackers, and the kale crackers were either meant to be eaten with your soup or they're meant to be saved as a snack. And it tells you, on the meal plan, it tells you exactly what to eat when.
Okay, so you get soup for lunch and dinner every day?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, okay. I'm good so far.
Yeah, the soup's 120 to 130 calories.
Yeah, the breakfast bar is...
I'm wanting to know volume.
Well, you can make the volume more. I mean, you just add water to it.
I always added a little more liquid to water to the soup than it called for to make it go a little further. And you can add, and he tells you, you can add herbs and spices.
Add liquid smoke?
Yeah, you probably could.
I mean,
could.
You probably could.
That goes with everything,
you know,
doesn't it?
We add some garlic and fresh pepper.
Right.
And, you know, we had all kinds of Mrs. Dash different seasonings that we were adding to make it different flavors.
Okay, so you get soup, lunch, and dinner. You get some crackers.
So every other day you get kale crackers, and those would either be with your soup or as your afternoon snack.
Okay.
And then every other day you get two packs of olives, and one was to be eaten with your soup, and then one was for an afternoon snack. And then three of the five nights, you got this little square of a chocolate. It had like puffed rice in it, like puffed quinoa, little chewy chocolate bar like thing.
Okay.
But it was very high in fiber.
Okay.
So like the number one ingredient was inulin, which is
right.
Fiber.
Okay.
So that was so it's a little kind of sweet treat a couple of nights, but I think it was meant to also kind of give you some extra fiber. That's it. I mean, that was the extent of it. So, like, what we would do is say the kale crackers. There are some days you got no afternoon snack. You were supposed to eat your kale crackers with your soup and then just wait till dinner. And I did kind of, like, I would eat. There was four crackers in the package. And
you
I would
saved
eat.
A couple.
Yeah, I would eat two with my lunch and then save two for the afternoon.
Okay.
And you'd be surprised how long you can make one of those little crackers last. But just
nibbling.
Chewing on it, nibbling.
Well, you know, I am the perfect example for this because I try and try and try to do my best to adopt the Okinawan culture of hara-hachi-boo, okay? And I'm not very good at that.
Oh, neither are we.
Well, I'm not either.
No.
Because I have noticed that, you know, if you just have a small, very small portion of something, okay, it really does satiate you and can carry you through. But what happens is if it's even veggie sushi or whatever it might be, you know, you might be able to get by with three or four or five bites of something and feel like, okay, that's all I needed. But
it's there in front of you.
It's there in front of you. I paid for it or I made it and I'm going to eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so, but we don't need anywhere near that much.
And I think that, I mean, obviously we found out. I mean, again, you're not going to not be hungry.
Right.
I mean, it's only 700 calories.
Right.
So, yeah, you're going to be hungry. But I feel like it's a different hunger. It's a mental challenge. You know it's only 5 days. You're kind of like...
The longest 5 days of my life.
You can do this. You can make it happen.
It was doable. And for somebody like me, it was eye-opening because I got to really evaluate some of my thinking processes when it came to food and how I've been so... What it convinced me was that I utterly worship food.
Oh, I know.
And... You know, my mother used to call me a gut worshiper when I was a little kid, and I hate to say it, Mom, you were right.
And, you know, while we do eat a whole food plant-based diet, and if you follow me on our Instagram page or our Facebook page, I post the foods that we cook, and, you know, we're eating some pretty fabulous foods.
No question about that.
I mean,
last picture you posted was unbelievable,
too. Still love our food. We just eat different food. And so, yeah, we can eat a little more of that kind of food than before. But I still think there were lessons to be learned besides the fact that, you know, we're still regenerating ourselves. There's still, even with us eating a whole food plant-based diet, because somebody did ask me that on our Facebook page when I was posting about this. Well, isn't just eating a whole food plant-based diet enough?
And the answer is probably not. From what I've been gathering in terms of fasting. Now, you do turn on some stem cells, you do elongate some of the telomeres by plant-based only. You do it a lot faster, a lot quicker on a fast. And, you know, for centuries, religious fasting has been a part of our cultural makeup. And we've just gotten away. All basically major religions, except maybe the Muslim, because of Ramadan.
But even he was talking about that in his book, and he said even with Ramadan, they fast during the day, but they
overindulge
way overindulge at night. So they're really not...
They're not
getting the benefit or following the principle of doing that.
But, you know, we've done religious fasts forever, and there's a lot of medical benefit to it. And we've just kind of forgotten about it.
Yeah.
You know, I started looking at this years ago when I came across the stuff at True North.
Sure.
So True North is a healthcare facility in Santa Rosa, California, which is northern California, north of San Francisco. It's basically a little bit, I think it's either in Sonoma Valley or it's just on the coast, on the edge of Sonoma Valley. But they do water-only fast, which are supervised by medical people. And their results are just absolutely astounding with what they report for water-only fast for up to 6 weeks, where people come in on all these medicines, and by day two, they're off almost all their medicines, and certainly by day four or five, they're no longer taking any medicine. And that's always intrigued me. I've always wanted to go out there and do that, not because I think I need to from a health standpoint. I want to experience it. And this was close to that, and it did open my eyes. And at some point in time in the future, I will do a water-only fast. I mean, it's convinced me that
I
need to do that.
He's going
to
live somewhere else while he does it.
I mean,
even my staff
cannot
said,
work and do it because his staff would quit.
Said, you need to go eat something while we were doing this.
Well, what I found interesting is while we were in the middle of doing this and I was telling someone we were doing a fast, someone had told me that Dr. Joel Fuhrman, who we also have read many of his books, has a book that he wrote back in the early 90s about fasting. And so I bought that book and read it while we were doing this. And one thing that he talked about in his fast I thought was fascinating was he had two people, but the first lady developed a significant cough like 2 weeks into this is water only fasting, and come to find out she'd been a heavy smoker like 20 years prior, but had quit. And that what they found is that during this long period of fasting, it was releasing so many toxins in her body that the nicotine that was left in her lungs was starting to come out.
That's crazy.
And that happened to him twice with two people, and both times they turned out to be
former smokers.
Wow. So anyway, just all fascinating, and it was a challenge, and it was fun, and we have our next one scheduled for May 20th. So looking forward to that. And Randy, by the time we come back, we'll have done his as well. And so we'll be anxious to get his feedback on
that. I'm speechless already.
She is pretty bossy, right?
That's right. I will make sure he has done it by then. So one of the things...
Now you feel my pain.
I know.
Hey, let's get back on track here. One of the things I was going to talk about today before we spent so much time on fasting, which we'll do part two of this when we come back next month, but I really wanted to spend some time talking about the microbiome and our gut bacteria.
Well, I think that's totally appropriate.
And
I think
this leads to that. And I think that's a good...
And your inner garden, as it's been described, and how you tend to your inner garden.
That's interesting.
Well, the more I have, as I've, you know, educated myself on various aspects of health... The more I have been amazed at the symbiotic relationship that we have with bacteria. You know, we kind of get a skewed view of bacteria, particularly as a surgeon, because, you know, I'm always doing everything I can to prevent any type of post-operative infection. And, you know, come to find out, the human body is actually more bacteria than it is human. So we have between 40 and 100 trillion human cells. We have between 100 and 300 trillion bacteria and viruses in our body. And our inner garden, so we've known for quite some time that the type of bacteria that resides in your intestines, if you are a meat eater, is a lot different than the type of bacteria that resides in your intestines if you eat primarily plants. And before there was DNA typing of bacteria, we didn't know the true extent of the difference. And the difference is fairly profound. And your inner garden, as it's been described, is fed by what you feed yourself, but it's more fed by what you feed yourself that can't be digested. So this has been referred to as prebiotic material, in that it feeds the bacteria. And it doesn't matter if you feed it primarily meat, as I used to, and I fed my bacteria the residuals of that meat, and so different bacteria would grow because of that. Or when I switch to eating plant-based, now I'm feeding my bacteria undigested plant matter. It totally changes the bacteria. And we thought that basically that all there was to it. That, okay, so you have different bacteria, but now we know that these bacteria ferment this plant matter, and they actually provide the energy, the fuel, for the inner lining of your intestines. Now, those cells aren't like most of the other cells in your body that run on glucose. They run on short-chain fatty acids. So if you're not eating plant matter, or very little, then those cells don't get nourished like they should. And now, what's been discovered are these short-chain fatty acids are actually now referred to as neurotransmitters. And these short-chain fatty acids perform further functions than just providing the energy. So what they do is they tell the collection of nerve cells in your intestines, which has been referred to as your gut brain, they tell your gut brain that food is plentiful, and your gut brain hurries food through the system. Whereas it doesn't matter the calories. So you could be eating, you know, 5,000 calories a day, but if you're not eating the appropriate amount of plant matter, then your gut brain is going to think food is scarce, and so it holds on to everything. And if that is rotten, decaying animal flesh, then that really increases your risk of developing colon cancer. Just from that mechanism alone, not to mention all the other myriad mechanisms by which eating red meat increases your risk of having colon cancer. But our gut brain thinks that food is scarce, so it holds on to everything and tries to extract everything it can. Whereas if you're eating a lot of fiber, then your gut brain, no matter how much you're eating, your gut brain is going to say food is plentiful, and so it hurries things through. Where on the other hand, you could be eating 5,000 calories a day and your gut brain's thinking you're not getting any, and it holds on to everything it's got.
Well, that was a lot. That was like my 5 sheets of paper in 5 minutes. Okay, let's like back up a little bit because you...
How was the watch made again?
Yeah, okay. Take a drink and let's back up a little bit. Everybody get that?
That's a gut brain synopsis. I mean, that's the gut synopsis.
Wow. Okay, we're going to back up just a little bit and break some of that down because
like the plant or the bacteria does with our plant matter.
Yeah, because I was kind of getting lost in there. So I think first it's important to know or think about our gut being as big as it is and being, I mean, would you say it's like the largest organ in our body?
Your endothelium is actually.
That is, so they're saying that the total surface area of your gut is 3,000 square feet.
Right. It's, I mean, because it has all these little folds.
Right.
and all the folds have different cells. And so when you kind of add all that up, mm-hmm. that's where they get the surface area.
And it's just, but it does so much to our overall health. I mean, I think we get so focused on like things like heart health,
right?
You know, and while that obviously is important, but I think that the gut, and there's so many things that are related to the health of our gut, like autoimmune diseases. And you think about the irritable bowel disease and Crohn's disease and colon cancer and all those.
Those things just happen. They're just genetic and they just happen.
Well, he's being facetious.
I'm being very facetious, but that is how most doctors are taught that this stuff happens and occurs. And it's not, I mean, and then we're very well schooled on treatment of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not schooled at all on the treatment of the cause.
When you just look at how you talked about the gut brain, but actually, I mean, how true that is and how real that the difference about your gut knowing about good bacteria versus bad bacteria and how it can, I mean, that's how you don't just have diarrhea all the time. I mean, it just like is actually able to look and see what's good and what's bad. And
well, you talked about the surface area of the gut, but that's one cell in thickness. That's all that separates your inner vascular system with some pretty toxic stuff that's in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
One cell lining. And so, and these cells are held together by what are called tight junctions. And that's kind of like cellular cement. And then we may eat something like contaminated with salmonella. And so this bacteria gets into our gut and then it causes the cement to crumble. And so those cells no longer are cemented together. And then this, you know, salmonella then allows its toxins to get into, not just into the intestines, but into our bloodstream, and then that can make us really sick. And all the immune reactions that occurs due to the cement being crumbled by the salmonella.
So let's talk about butyrate, because I hear a lot about that and about...
That is a short-chain fatty acid.
And where does that come from?
It comes from fermentation.
Because I thought I've heard things saying like, oh, there's butyrate in that and you don't want to have, maybe I'm getting that mixed up.
Well, there's butyric acid.
Yeah.
Okay. That is the primary acid that gives butter its smell.
Oh, no.
So I think maybe. And butyrate in the intestine, I mean, it's butyric acid.
But you have to have that.
Correct.
I mean, butyrate is what helps teach or tell your gut what's good and what's bad, or feeds the good.
So short chain fatty acids, there's several, but butyrate, propionate, and so these words that end in ate are also interchangeable with words that end with acid. Propionic acid, butyric acid, they're the same things. I'm not going to get into what makes it butyrate versus butyric acid, but it's essentially the same chemical. But butyric acid, you know, we've known for quite some time that it is required to feed the lining of the intestines. What we didn't know was that not only did it feed the cells, it acted as a neurotransmitter. And that's something that within the last year, maybe even 6 months, that the research came out on this stuff.
But when you think about how good butyrate is for your gut and that your gut has to have it to feed the good bacteria to tell it what to do, well, you only get butyrate from fiber. Correct?
For the most part. So here's one of the arguments why some people say that dairy is required because of butyric acid. But there are a lot of other fatty acids in butter that are very harmful. And so just because it has one component that might be beneficial,
Well, that's like the coconut oil argument exactly. that we don't want to get into again.
Well, but I mean, said that, okay, butyrate's also in butter, people are going to say, well, butter's good for your colon. No, it's not. It is decidedly not good for your colon. It's because of all the other bad things in it. But butyric acid is the acid that causes the smell of butter. So well, when you smell butter being...
I never
really
thought about the smell of butter, but anyway. Well, except for when I walked into a movie theater and that was...
That's popcorn.
...genetically modified, I'm sure, because that's not even real. Anyway, back to the fiber. Well, what I've been reading is if you don't get enough fiber, you don't produce enough butyrate to tell your bacteria to do all the good things that you need it to do. And in this country today, with our huge meat-loving society, I mean, there is no fiber in meat. And what I'm, you know, as...
You need to say that again, because even going through medical school and all that, I never comprehended that there wasn't fiber
in meat.
There's
no fiber in meat.
Right. Or any animal
product. Or any animal product, for that matter.
Which totally blew me away when I learned that.
Well, because I guess I've, in my head, everything you ate had fiber. Well, it was food, right? You know? Yeah.
I know.
I always thought meat had fiber, that's for sure.
Well, guys, we're getting close. Hey, we're going to have to just...
We're going to shut this train down.
We are going to shut it down, and we are going to do part two of butyrate and fiber and gut bacteria.
And tending your happy garden.
Yes, we're going to get into that next month for sure. So until then, if you are interested in what we've talked about and want to hear more, please go to our website, plantbasedokc.com. You can, there's a link on there under wellness events to what we've talked about earlier, our seminars at the hospital and being able to sign up for them. This broadcast will be posted on our website in a couple of days, and so you can go back and listen to it or share this with your friends. And what else, Randy? We got it coming up.
Health Forum
Monday coming up, and the Eating You Alive documentary that we were in, that we held a premiere for, we're hoping will be available for digital download or purchase in the next week or so.
That's right. That's supposed to be coming.
So our Facebook page, Plant-Based OKC on Facebook, my Instagram page is also Plant-Based OKC. Our website, we will post information about the documentary as we learn more about that as well. So I guess that's all for today. And we're just going to
leave you with just eat real food.
Eat real food. And a shout out to Kathy.
Focus on the food.
That's right.
Live life on purpose with purpose.
Amen.